Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this Mother's Day was the 14th of 18 children. She's a twin, Irish, a soprano, a diva, an opera singer, the classical voice coach of the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, and the founder of the Motor City Lyric Opera. Most of all, she's a mom. Her name, Mary Callahan Lynch, and we're honored to have her as our guest. I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Mary Callahan Lynch, the founder of the Motor City Lyric Opera. Mary, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jack.
Can we start by you talking about your dad, John Callahan, who's 89 years old?
I would love to. Well, my father was born in 1916 in upstate New York in Oswego. He was the third child of six children. His mother, Margaret Hogan, married Fishy Callahan, and actually two of his brothers were priests, Monsignor Callahan and Father Pat Callahan, and he absolutely fell in love with church music as a very young boy. In fact, his first professional job was when he was 14 years old and was the church organist at a local parish near Oswego.
You're one of 18 children. What did he do for a living?
Well, he had to do a lot. He was a church organist. He was a school teacher. He taught fourth grade. He was the glee club director at Brother Rice High School. And he taught at Mary Grove College, theory and organ. And he had a very full private studio. So he literally worked from sunup to sundown to provide for us.
What did you learn from your dad?
Oh, so many things. I think an unshakable faith, tremendous work ethic. I mean, he just had a tremendous capacity for work and discipline. He had high expectations, and we all tried to live up to them. But I think more than anything, my father is a tremendous man of faith. He took the doctrine of the Catholic Church very seriously, obviously having 18 children. And so his faith is probably the greatest gift that my father and my mother gave to, I think, all of us.
Your mom, Mary Callahan, passed to eternity in 2004.
Yes.
She was an only child who went on to have 18 children.
I know. It's extraordinary, isn't it? And not only was she an only child, but she was a very cherished only child, I would say, had the best of everything. And I really wasn't prepared, I think, for the hardships and had no idea what laid ahead of her. But the truth is, she was so in love with my father. And I know one reporter asked and said, "Boy, Mrs. Callahan, you must really love children." And she said, "No, I just really love Jack." So she had a tremendous sense of humor. And, you know, I think both of my parents were gifted with a high intellect. They were. But what they also had, like my father, my mother had a tremendous capacity for work. And they were educated. They had a tremendous appreciation for the arts. They met when they were high school sweethearts. They had the leads in HMS Pinafore, the Gilbert and Sullivan musical, and fell in love. They both had full ride scholarships to Syracuse University, my father for organ performance, my mother for vocal performance, and got married after my mother's freshman year and proceeded to have 18 children.
18 children, one set of twins.
Yes.
You're the twin.
I am.
19 pregnancies, 2 miscarriages.
Yes.
60 grandchildren, 50 great-grandchildren, and 3 great-great-grandchildren. Mary, this isn't a family. This is a country.
Well, you know, Jack, there's strength in numbers. You know, they say, a priest once said to me, you know, Mary, big family, big joys, big sorrows. And it's true. You know, we've had our sorrows, and we certainly have had our joys. And that's what, you know, certainly life is all about. It's bitter and it's sweet.
How many bathrooms did you have in the house?
Everyone always asks that, Jack. Five. You know, for the first 10 children were raised in Detroit. My father came here from Oswego and had his first job was at St. Bernard's, then went to St. Catharines. And then I was born in December of 1954. It was around 56 that they moved out to Birmingham. And a priest friend, actually, Father Kowalski, helped them with the down payment of the house. It had 9 bedrooms, 5 bathrooms. And so we all lived there for 1 year, all 18, because the year after my sister Bridget, the youngest, was born, my oldest sister Margaret was married. So
how did your mom dole out the food every night?
In order. It went by age, you know. And we did have a 12-foot-long dining room table. And it's interesting because, you know, today with all the different sports and commitments that kids have, we had to be there at 6 o'clock for dinner. It was not negotiable. And that was the one time of the day that we all sat together. And, you know, my parents would go around, what happened today? How was your day? And it was quite an event.
When she had fried chicken, if I was one of the kids, man, I'd be putting chicken in my pockets. How did she count that everybody got equal?
She just did. You know, a mother just does. And we always had, you know, a meat, a potato. We always had dessert. It may have been Jell-O, or, you know, but we were well fed. You know, we never went hungry.
Every child is different. Every child is unique. How did she handle the 18 different?
Again, I think my mother had a tremendous capacity to love, and she always used to say comparisons are odious. You know, she never really did compare one against the other. She really, I think they both reveled in the unique qualities that each of us have.
We're talking to Mary Callahan Lynch, and I'm Jack Grasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Mary Callahan Lynch, the classical voice coach of the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin. Mary, was being one of 18 children an advantage or a disadvantage?
Well, you know, I'm sure there were disadvantages. Obviously, to be one of 18 is an extraordinary experience. But I think, you know, and there were some burdens along with that. But, you know, with burdens comes blessings. And I've obviously learned so much being one of 18. I learned how to share. We learned how to take care of each other. In many aspects, we raised each other because there were so many of us. There was a fierce loyalty that we felt towards our parents and towards each other. And, you know, being the 14th, I just followed. The rules were set. And you just sort of went along with the program, you know. And my parents did have to run a tight ship, of course, or it would sink.
Your mom wrote an autobiography entitled Living Faith, Hope, and Love, a Memoir. How did that come about?
Well, my mother always joked about, she always came up with very creative names for her autobiography. One time she said, I think it should be named Sex and Violence. She had a great sense of humor. My mother was a real character. But, and unfortunately, she began from her very early childhood, her autobiography, and she only got up to about when we actually moved to Birmingham. So it only includes the first 16 children. It does not include my brother Patrick and my little sister Bridget. But she wanted to write her extraordinary story, and she did.
What were the biggest things you learned from your mom?
I think tenacity. She was very tenacious, you know, not to give up. Persevere, I learned, or I think a great and deep passion for music. Our household was immersed in music. And she, my mother was a great pianist herself. She'd sit down and, you know, play Bach, Beethoven, whatever. It was just such a part of our life. And so I cannot separate really my being or my experience. I can't separate it from music or from my faith, because it was our life. And my father being a church organist, we were in his choir. Our whole lives revolved around liturgies and the different holidays, and particularly the religious ones. So, but my mother was so passionate. She had a great capacity for life. And I like to think that I've inherited that from her, a great verve and just a love of life. She savored everything, you know, whether it was a good book or a good meal, a beautiful piece of music. She had a great perspective, I think.
What was your first job?
My first job was babysitting, actually. We all went to Catholic schools, and we were expected to pay for our tuition for high school and for college. And so I started babysitting in sixth grade, saving for the tuition. And then when I was 15, I sort of fibbed about my age and got a waitress job because the money was better. And actually, that was the best job, certainly the most lucrative for me, putting myself through Marion High School, which is where... six of my sisters went and to Mary Grove College, and I was the sixth daughter to graduate from Mary Grove College, actually.
You meet Pat Lynch, and you marry him.
I do. Yes, I did, Jack. What was I thinking? No, he is a great guy. I was 19 years old, actually, and what's funny is Patrick actually went to the same grade school I went to, which was Holy Name. But being 5 years older, our paths never crossed. Well, Patrick's a funeral director, and I was asked to sing a funeral at Holy Name, where my father was the church organist. And he came up to me afterwards and said, "You have such a beautiful voice," and was very solicitous and walked me to the car. And here was this, you know, very, to me, mature, this 25-year-old man. I was 19. And I guess he went back to the office and said, "I'm going to marry her." Which is sort of cute, except that, you know, we hadn't been on a date. So he, Father Harrington, now Bishop Harrington, was our pastor. And on the way to the cemetery, Harrington was asking about Patrick's love life and thought he should settle down. I mean, you know, he was getting up in years, you know. And he said, "Well, I found the one." And he said, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah, Mary Callahan." And he goes, "Well, you know, she's dating someone else. I know that, because Father Harrington was very close to our family." And he said, "That's okay. I'm going to marry her." And so he pursued me, and the rest, as they say, is history.
I heard a wise grandmother once say that a man chases a woman until she catches him.
Ah. Yeah, but I was naive. I really didn't know that was what was happening, Jack, you know? But yeah, I guess so.
Webster defines mother, amongst other things, as a woman who conceives, gives birth to, raises, and nurtures a child. How do you define a mom?
Well, I think for me, my mother was a teacher. She taught me so much. And, of course, your parents are your first teachers. And she was my best friend. I'm very grateful and honored to be able to say that. We were very, very close. She, I think, really made all of us feel we were the favorite, and that was quite a task, having 18. You know, a mother's love is primal. It's such an intense love. It's really hard to describe, you know? But I remember, I think this is a kind of a neat story. My brother Ed was talking to my mother about dating, and she said there were four attractions. One was physical, and this is typically, you know, a very strong attraction, but it's also the first to go. The second attraction is intellectual, and she explained how completely infatuated she was with my father, even after a half century of marriage, because he was so smart and well-read. And then the third attraction was emotional. She said that God had blessed her with a husband who was her rock, for she was more likely to respond emotionally to something, and Dad was the one who let her be herself and grow. And the fourth attraction was spiritual. She said, without the love of God and the faith she and my father shared, they would not have had such a special and strong relationship. So they were both great teachers about commitment, about sticking it out, especially today when marriage is so tenuous, I guess would be the word.
Earlier you said about your mom that she had a great verve for life, a great love for life, a great zest for life. You have that, but as long as I've known you, you have a special glow whenever you talk about Caitlin or Patty.
Well, yeah, I do. Thank you.
Why?
Well, again, I think it's that the primal love you have for your children. Our daughter, Caitlin, is just turned 26. She's finished her master's of vocal performance at Cincinnati Conservatory of Music, and our Patty will be graduating from Boston College this month.
We're talking to Mary Callahan Lynch. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Mary Callahan Lynch. Mary, the whole world can mock you, cheat you, write you off, but your mom will always be there for you. Why is that?
Because she's your mom. That's why. It kind of goes with the territory, I think, of being a mother. You always want to be there for your children. And again, I feel like it's almost a primal thing. You want to protect, to nurture, and to teach your children.
When you and Pat disagreed on parenting, what did you do?
Well, we had a rule that if Caitlin or Patty came to us and they would, you know, they try to conquer and divide, or divide and conquer. And if they would come to Patrick and his, whether it was a curfew, was, let's say, at 11 and mine was at 12, we'd go with the 11. We'd go with whoever had the more stringent answer, we'd go with that. Because, you know, it was easy. They would, you know, they would play one against the other.
How did you get through the teenage years?
A lot of prayer. No, and you know what? We were on deck, so to speak. We were on deck. And I remember one time, Patty, our son, he was like 14, and we had a big fight. And he goes, Mom, you are no longer my friend. And I said, really? I said, well, I have lots of friends and you do too, but I have one son and you have one mother, and it is not my job to be your friend. It is my job to be your mother. And I think that's true. I think today, a lot of times, parents feel they have to be friends or buddies. Well, our job is to be the parent.
How did you learn how to turn the other cheek and at times stand for what you believed in?
I think, again, by example. I think I saw my parents stand up for what they believed in. They didn't just talk the talk. They walked the walk. So we had a daily example of, you know, standing up for what we believe in.
Today, parents are a taxi cab service. It's one function after another after another. We never had that when we were kids. What advice would you give to parents about that?
Well, I think Patrick and I were certainly guilty of overscheduling, but at one point we realized, a child can just do so much, and that it was so important for just playtime, just for downtime. And I think, if anything, that's what's really lacking today, just to hang loose and be together.
We're talking to Mary Callahan Lynch, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Mary Callahan Lynch, the 14th of 18 children. Mary, today, being a mom, the counterforces in raising children today, you've got excess materialism, you've got MTV, you've got internet pornography, you've got peer pressure, You've got video games. How can you be successful today against all of this stuff?
It's tough. It's a real challenge, I think, to be a parent more than ever today. I think, you know, you have to focus on values, what's important. I think our whole culture, you know, again, there's the yin and the yang about such advancements in technology and being the internet and this just incredible source of information that young people have access to. But that's a blessing, but also it's can be very frightening. So there are parental controls. Be a watchdog. Be, you know, diligent. Don't just say, oh, whatever, that's what the kids do. You know, you have to be on guard and be all over it. I mean, that's, you know, our kids laugh and that they said we were pretty crazy, especially when they were teenagers. And but we don't regret it. And I think, frankly, children like that. I think they believe they want all this freedom, but really what they want are they want structure. They want control. They want to know you really are in charge because they are not ready to be.
Some parents deep down would like to have additional children, larger families, but they believe that raising kids these days is prohibitively expensive. What would you say to them?
Well, you know, my parents, they had 9 children, 3 bedrooms, no car, no washer, no dryer. My father went and got his groceries on the bus. And so, I mean, you know, it's, I guess it's what your priorities are, you know, what you want. Yes, it is expensive today because I think of the expectations of all this extracurricular, you know, activities that kids want to do. But, yeah, it's a different world, but, you know, you make do.
You and Pat have two tremendous young human beings, Caitlin and Patty. What role did Pat play in making them great children?
Well, I think he's a great father, and he was a hands-on father. He has his own business, you know, he's a funeral director, and he was always at every game, every recital, every performance. It was his priority, and I think being really hands-on and intimately involved with both of their education and their activities has made a difference. And he's a rock. He's very strong. And I think for any child to have a strong father is a blessing.
He also has a great voice.
Yes, he does.
I've heard you a number of times where you, Caitlin, and Pat perform together.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of feeling is that for you?
It's wonderful. It's just a joy. Patrick's grandmother actually was a coloratura soprano. She was chairman of the music department for Wayne State, which in that day was really extraordinary. So he inherited a great musical heritage himself from, you know, his grandmother. And of course, it's so obvious in our family with both my parents. And then Caitlin got, you know, a double triple whammy, has been given a tremendous gift. So it's a joy. It's an absolute joy. But Patrick really had no training. He just has this natural gift.
Robert Shuler Sr. says the biggest thing that a dad can do for his children is to love their mom.
How true. Well, I think, you know, in our society today, that things are more equitable than they have been. But usually it is the mother who gets up in the middle of the night when the child's sick. And if the mother feels loved, if she feels cherished, then it makes her job easier if she feels supported by her husband.
What other advice would you give to husbands and dads tonight?
Well, I think, for lack of a better word, to make things more equitable. We've come a long way. I think we have a long way to go. That, you know, the husband and wife, it's an equitable relationship. There's not one that has more power than the other.
You're the founder of Motor City Lyric Opera. How did you ever become a professional opera singer?
Good question. Actually, I always sang in my father's choir, and again, you know, we were just immersed in music. When I was in high school, senior year, I received the role of Maria in The Sound of Music. And I mean, I think my parents knew I could sing, but being there were so many of us, I think they were like, wow, she can really sing. And we looked into Interlaken, and I went to Interlaken my senior year summer. And at that time, it was part of University of Michigan, and I was able to receive college credit, which enabled me to graduate a semester early. And went to Marygrove College, and I actually majored in acting. I was just so enthralled with theater and minored in voice. And as an undergraduate, one of my professors was directing at Michigan Opera, a production, Naughty Marietta. And I auditioned and actually became working professionally doing compromario, which is small roles for Michigan Opera, even before I graduated. And that's how it sort of, and then I just kept getting bigger and bigger roles and fell in love with the opera, you know, the music. It's so satisfying. It's the pinnacle of all arts, I think, because there's the dance. You know, obviously there's the great music. There's the acting.
You've performed on multiple continents. What's the greatest opera of all time?
Ooh, that's a tough question, Jack. I know La Boheme is by Puccini is performed. I think it's the most performed opera. But, you know, my personal favorite is Amahl and the Night Visitors, because that was one of my childhood memories. We would watch it every Christmas. Giancarlo Minotti, the composer, composed it for NBC's Hallmark Hall of Fame presentation. And on the 50th anniversary, we brought Giancarlo Minotti from Scotland to direct a production of Amahl. And what I love about it, it's a perfect introduction to opera for children or families, for someone who's never seen an opera. It's in English. It's only an hour long. And the message is beautiful.
How have you balanced being a professional opera singer, a mom, and a wife?
Well, I think, first of all, I've been blessed with a lot of energy. So I think I've had the capacity to do it. My most important role, I believe, has been that of a mother. And so that always came first. I remember when Caitlin was like 4 years old, I was doing a production of La Boheme. I was doing Musetta, and I had to leave for like 2 weeks. And she was so upset, you know, and she said, Mommy, you know, why do you have to go? And I said, well, you know, God wants me to be your mom, but he also wants me to sing. And then it was just became increasingly more difficult to be away from them. And I feel blessed that I was able to perform so much regionally here. And that's the one thing about opera. It's pretty fast and furious. It's not like a Broadway show where you're gone for months. You rehearse for a couple weeks, and the run is usually 2 to 3 weekends. So it was perfect for me to be able to be a mom and to be a wife.
You're the classical voice coach of the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin. How did that ever happen, and what's that like teaching Aretha Franklin how to sing?
Well, it's a blast. I don't really teach her how to sing. I teach her operatic repertoire. Well, I was on the board of AFTRA, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, because I did a lot of voiceover work. And she called the union looking for someone to teach her Nessun Dorma. She was doing a party for Pavarotti, and she needed to. He wanted her to sing this aria. So I went and worked with her. And then she had to pitch it for him for the Grammy Award. She was in New York that same time of the Grammy Awards. Pavarotti became ill, and she had a 40-minute notice and went on stage and just sang her heart out. And then she got so many requests from different orchestras that we had to increase her repertoire. So I've been working with her for, it's almost 8 years now.
Mary's mom was her first voice coach. When we come back from break, we'll ask her to sing a portion of the first aria that her mom ever taught. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack, That's a little bit of O Mio Babbino Caro from the opera Gianni Schicchi. The character's Lauretta, and that was the first aria my mother ever taught me.
And that's Mary Callahan Lynch. Welcome back. I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Fantastic, Mary. How was it you came to start the Motor City Lyric Opera?
Well, I actually, when 9/11 happened, I was singing with L'Opéra de Montréal, Montreal Opera, doing Peter Grimes, and I'll never forget it. It was so, as everyone, it was so devastating, and we found out, and then we had to go to rehearsal, and I was surrounded with this beautiful music, and what came to mind was one of my favorite quotes by Leonard Bernstein, and it was, "This will be our response to violence, to make music more beautifully, more passionately, more devotedly than ever before." And I felt a great calling to bring the transformative power of music, great music, to Metropolitan, to Detroit, particularly underserved children and seniors, audiences that would never have the occasion to experience beautiful music. So November 2002, we launched the Motor City Lyric Opera at the Music Hall. Mayor Kilpatrick was there, and I was able to, I think, assemble an incredible board of directors. We have Martha Reeves on our board, Paula Tupman from WDIV, Frank Stella. I was able to coerce Aretha Franklin to be an honorary board member. Lynn and Bruce Duffy from DP and Company. Just a really tremendous group of people. The Honorable Henry W. Sod, Judge Sod, Mara Letica, dear friends and colleagues that shared in our our mission, and the mission of the Motor City Lyric Opera, is to inspire and educate students and families in the metropolitan Detroit area, in particular the underserved, through opportunities to experience highly artistic musical presentations.
Since 2002, 30,000 children in Southeast Michigan have seen this opera, plus learned its message. What has this experience taught you?
Well, it's taught me so much, Jack. You know, to go from a performer to a producer, I tell you, I get up every day appreciating Dr. David DeGuerra, what he's accomplished. You know, being on the other side of thing has given me a totally different perspective. You know, as a singer, you go in an audition, and now I've held auditions. And, of course, all you want is to find the right singer, you know. And I've learned how to ask for money, which has been very challenging, you know, to be fierce and calling on anyone who would listen to me to get the funding. The main production we've done every year is Amahl and Night Visitors, which is the one-act opera I spoke about earlier. And then we have an opera on wheels, and we go to different schools. We're going this season, this spring, to Children's Hospital of Detroit, Judson Center, Angel's Place. The bulk of our locations will be Detroit Public Schools. You know, they're slashing the arts, which is just so devastating. Because to me, as we said before, music was just part of my life, and the transformative power of music is so important. It can elevate. It can inspire. And so I'm very proud that 30,000 have seen an opera free of charge, and that is really due to the generosity of Pulte Homes Incorporated, underwrote it for 3 years. Right now, the J.P. Morgan Chase Foundation, the Joan and Wayne Webber Foundation, and Aretha Franklin have underwritten this spring's, and 7,000 children will see this, and seniors, this spring. Free of charge.
How can we learn more about it?
Well, you can always call the office, 248-647-7976, and you can check our website, www.mclopera.org. That's www.mclopera.org.
What advice, Mary, would you give to our young listeners who want to win American Idol?
Well, don't shout. Don't scream. You know, that's the thing I'm a little bit concerned about, and that's part of our mission. That's a great question, Jack, because, you know, it's so amplified, and what our mission is to give unamplified music to our audiences. Learn the piano, get some, you know, the basics, and get the right teacher. The right teacher is everything, I think.
What advice would you give to young children today?
Follow your dreams. Don't let anyone get in the way of your dreams. Trust God's plan.
In 1915, Howard Johnson wrote a poem entitled Mother. Can you share it with us?
M is for the million things she gave me. O means only that she's growing old. T is for the tears she shed to save me. H is for her heart of purest gold. E is for her eyes with love light shining. R means right, and right she'll always be. Put them all together, they spell mother, a word that means the world to me.
You've talked a lot tonight, Mary, about faith. Why has it played such a huge role in your life?
Well, I think because it was such a part of our life. And if you don't mind, I'd love to share something that my mother wrote in 1960 for the Parish Visitor. And I think this says it all. She says, "It seems to me that some people today are very conceited. They think the present and the future are entirely in their hands and that the burden is on them alone. They forget that God will not be outdone in generosity. These are not empty words to us. They are a living reality. It occurred to us the other day that we have a great chance for heaven with all our children praying for us when we go home to God. How can we lose our greatest goal?"
People refer to you as a diva, and you joke about being a diva. But as I observe you through the years, you've got the good points of being a diva, but you don't have the negative points.
Oh, well, thanks, Jack.
How is that?
I think being one of 18 children. You learn how to share. You learn that, you know what? You learn that the whole is more important than the parts. The whole is more important.
Father Hesburgh was on this show a few months ago. I asked him, if you had one more dream, Father, what would it be? And immediately he said, "Jack, I'd educate every woman on earth. Because if we did, so many of our problems, wars, battles, hatred would go away." What do you think about that?
Well, I think that, I mean, what a beautiful testament. And I think a very real one. I think the more women are emboldened, the better our world will be.
What dreams or goals do you still have, Mary Callahan Lynch?
Well, I still have dreams to keep performing, you know, to keep singing, which gratefully I'm able to do. As part of our Opera on Wheels, I have a program that's called Songs My Mother Taught Me, and which I did last week at the Lourdes Nursing Home, and it was a great delight. So I guess my greatest dream is to be able to see my children's children.
Final question. What are you the proudest of?
I think being a mother.
Why?
My children. Because they're really special. And I think they don't just talk the talk, they walk the walk.
Well, for all our listeners tonight, I want to say thanks.
Oh, the pleasure's been mine, Jack.
For all the people that have listened to you perform, locally, nationally, internationally, for your son and your daughter, keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Our guest next Sunday will be the co-creator of Chicken Soup for the Soul, which has sold over 80 million copies, Jack Canfield. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything truly is possible. Spoke.
Believe in yourself.